Hey, this is Brian Tarquin. You're listening to Guitar Tracks, 89.5 FM, WFIT. Today, my special guest is Ron Bumblefoot Thal, the lead guitarist from the largest rock and roll band in the world, Guns N' Roses. That song's called Catcher in the Rye, from Chinese Democracy, the 2008 release from Guns N' Roses. So I caught up with my good friend Bumblefoot, and I wanted to see where he got his start with guitar.
I was 5 years old, and I just heard the Kiss Alive album. And as soon as I heard it, it just changed my entire life, very first one. The energy coming off the speakers, it was so visual. Like, you listen and you feel like you're there, and feeling it all is incredible. And I knew as soon as I heard that, that's what I wanted to do with my life. And within a year, I had a band together. I was 6 years old. We were making demos by taking a cassette recorder, having it in the corner of the room. Me and the other guitar player would be standing right up against it, playing with a little nylon string to pitch drummer had his little Bugs Bunny Sears drum set 10 feet back, and that's how we got level, just by proximity to the cassette recorder. Then what we would do is we would hit play on what we just recorded, play it back, have it facing another cassette recorder, and we would sing along facing that cassette recorder, and that's how we overdubbed vocals. Little kids that had no idea, no education, information, experience, anything, we just figured out how to overdub multi-track. We would make demos like that. We would play in my basement, in the backyard, at the school across the street that we went to. On a show day, I would cut up pieces of paper to make confetti and put them into little cups. The audience, which was all our neighbors, and at the end of the show, they would throw the confetti in the air. And nothing changed. Like, it was the same formula that 30 years later, doing it on a big stage, only to these big confetti cannons shooting confetti, and nobody has to cut them up. You stick with it, and you nurture it, and it grows. I guess the first really professional one, getting paid by a promoter, being hired to play. I guess the first gig like that was probably when I was about 14 at a bar in Staten Island, New York. I had a band called Paradox. Half the set was Rush covered, Iron Maiden, and then we had some originals in there. We did everything from Bytor and the Snow Dog, La Villa, to everything, all the crazy stuff. That would be around 1983.
So now that Ron's got the moves down from the Kiss Live album, he's got the neighborhood down for buying all his tickets to his live show, where does he go next? Well, he gets signed by Shrapnel Records and then moves on to open his own record label.
You know, I was putting out albums and touring Europe, teaching. The first record deal I got was on Shrapnel Records. Yeah, I got two albums out and then got out of the contract. It was tricky because it's, you know, the way the contract was, his two albums need to be released, which means that he could have me record 100 albums and keep saying, nah, I don't like this one, nah, I don't like this one. And I would be stuck, you know, forever. I had to get out of that. The instrumental stuff I only did for one album for Shrapnel, because he wanted me to do an instrumental album. To me, instrumental music was sort of like Van Halen. Like, there would be a few of them throughout the album. Ultimately, they were, you know, a rock band that would go out and do vocal songs. And every once in a while, there'd be the intro to Little Guitars or Spanish Fly or things like that. Then I started my own label and just started putting out my own music. That's when things got good. That's when I actually started making a living for real. The studio got better and better. It went from live recordings to actually doing them with a little mixing board, to putting up a wall and making a little drum room, to getting my first Fostex A8 quarter-inch 15 IPS reel-to-reel. That sounded so good, that thing. I was one of the first artists on CD Baby. I was doing, you know, an Amazon Advantage, just started their indie program and jumped on that. So real grassroots.
So what's next with a guy who has rock star chops? We'll go to the biggest band in the world, Guns N' Roses. And he tells us how he got the gig.
I remember I jammed with Joe Satriani at PNC Bank Art Center. He called me on stage and we did a little jam together. After that, he emailed me and he recommended me. A few hours later, someone reached out. And this was back in the summer of 2004. We talked and it was a while before anything really happened. Jump ahead 2 years, year and a half. They were in New York rehearsing. Asked if I wanted to come jam. So I went there with my guitar. We banged out three songs next night. Another three songs. We did that seven times and hit the road for 3 months, rehearsing old stuff, and there was new stuff, unreleased stuff, and they were so worried that something would get leaked, so they wouldn't give me a copy. They had this hard policy, no music is given to anybody. I had to learn half of Chinese Democracy album on a set of headphones in the other room for a half hour with pen and paper, just listening, and as I listened one time through, just writing down notes of what stuck in my head, had to nail everything. This was when the album wasn't finished yet, and we hit the road, and then in between legs of touring of 2006 and 2007, I would jump into studios in L.A. or hit Electric Lady, bang out guitar parts 14 hours a day. I wasn't ever allowed to hear or get to know. And suddenly, like, okay, play. And I would have one guy in my ear saying, all right, that was great, while the other one at the same exact time would be saying, no, not like that. And so I would do 100 different things, from different rhythms to different melodies, to different crazy solos, to fretless, to fretted, to wah, to heavy, to light, to groovy and funky, to nasty and dirty, to just all different vibes to see what could fit. Then in my absence, they would just chop it up and put together, you know, something that would be a surprise to all. I remember one time being with the producer, like, listening to it, like, oh, that was interesting. Who played that? I was like, that was you. I mean, that's one thing that I love about doing my own music, is that I get to truly make a statement really feel the music and get comfortable with it, and then get to say what I have to say in a way that's real. I remember when we had to play live, I got stems of the guitar parts that I'll be playing. I was freaking out, like, this is impossible. I'd be going up the neck, and then suddenly I'm in a whole other spot, and like, I can't do this note for note. So then I just kind of loosened up and just said, all right, let me just do my own live way of doing this and make it work. I mean, I had played in a couple of other bands, but not as an actual member. Like, I, you know, did a tour with Lita Ford, but I put her band together on 2 days' notice. We jumped down to a house, banged out 15 songs, and then did a tour for the summer. You know, some things like that, or just as a guest guitar player for a set with someone. That with Nancy Sinatra, that was cool as hell. She was the best, just so cool. So coming into Guns, the only weird thing is that this is the first time that I was doing it where I was going to be seen as a band member. The old stuff, I mean, hell, it's classic. Everybody knows it. Any rock guitar player that doesn't know everything off of Appetite has not done his homework. Not knowing those songs is like not knowing Smoke on the Water. So I already knew this stuff. Like, when we would finally get a jam, and like, hey, how about, can you do these three songs? Like, yeah, I know. I was like, hey, tomorrow, you want to try these three? Sure, I know. It's like, just tell me which parts, who wants to take which solo. I mean, if you look at Boston, you look at Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, you look at all these bands that can have a rhythm and guitar harmonies, Queensryche, so many. We could have rearranged a lot of the stuff in a way to really make it where people say, God, I want to have three guitars in my band. The old music wasn't built that way. But actually, it kind of was at times. There would be Dizzy on one side, Flash on the other side, and then in the middle, there would be all these other things that came in and out, all the icing on top. There were three things happening. It's just that if you're going to do it like that, there's going to be people at different points that are just not playing, which when I first joined the band, that's what they were making me do. They just said, well, you know, you don't play in these verses, you only come in here. They wanted me to not play at all. They were making it really tough. I had never been on stage, you know, with a guitar in my hand, not doing anything, not playing. What I would do is I would just find ways to just enhance and just accent. You know, and sometimes I would just turn my volume all the way off and I would play, but I would just be the sound man where it's like, all right, I'm going to play, but you're just not going to hear me.
You know me, I've got to ask him the Guitar Tracks monthly question. What's your gear? What do you play and how you do it?
VGA, V-I-G-I-E-R, VGA Guitars. I've been with them, God, almost 18 years. Out of France, right around the Paris area. We do all kinds of crazy custom guitars. Like, they made my guitar that looks like the giant foot with the wings that pop out. The fretless guitars they do. So they do my signature guitar, which is the double neck with a fretless neck on top. That's pretty much the main thing that I use. I take that thing, I head out, and do whatever I need to do with that one guitar. So in the guitar, I have DiMarzio's, I have Tone Zone by the Bridge. I like it because it's clear, you can hear the notes. I always like that whole Holdsworth, Eddie thing, that brown. It's got energy, but it's not all saturated dirt. Like, you can hear the notes, and that's what I like. It happened that. And then in the neck, I have, it looks like a single coil, but it's a dual rail humbucker in a single coil space. It's called a chopper. It has all the articulation and honesty that you get out of a single coil, but it has the fullness. It's a great one, and the neck is very expressive. I'm simple. I can't do that having, like, a whole vault of 18 different guitars. I mean, I don't even bring a tech when I do my own stuff. I got one guitar, and that's it. It's just me and a guitar. Like, with Guns, yeah, you know, I have to have a tech because it's such a technical show as far as everyone having their own in-ear mixes for every song, individually different for each person, and such a big stage with so much going on and so many changes in the music where you're going from clean to dirty to this to that, and you might be on the opposite end of the stage and you may not have time to sprint and get over to your wah pedal. You need a tech for that stuff. Then bringing a bunch of gear out, too much to load yourself. Angle, Invader, 100 watt head, and then I just got a Marshall cabinet full of beautiful Celestions. That angle head is so powerful that I gotta go 65, 70 watt. Everything else just tears up. A wah and TC Electronic stuff. Usually using like a Nova system that gives me a whole lot of anything I need. The best sound is the most direct route.
I couldn't agree more, Ron. Less pedals, the better. Clogs up your sound, too much stuff on stage, too much noise. You want a pure tone, baby, and you get it here on Guitar Tracks Show every month, WFIT 89.5 FM.